Welcome to this special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2024 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is offering a series of candidate conversations. We reached out to all candidates filed to run in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, as well as governor, lieutenant governor, and insurance commissioner, and invited them to sit down with us. Candidates in each race are being asked about the same set of topics to allow you to get to know them and compare them. The interviews you'll hear on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. The race for governor features six candidates seeking to replace term-limited Democrat John Carney. Today, we focus on the three facing off in next month's Democratic primary. We start with Bethany Hall Long. Hall Long is finishing her second term as lieutenant governor. Before that, she served in the General Assembly, in the House from 2003 to 2008, and then in the State Senate from 2009 to 2016. Beyond your annual budget proposal, would you be active in presenting proposals or initiatives to the General Assembly, trying to drive the agenda?
That ability is important. You know, that's what I bring to the table, being proactive. Also, I'm competitive. I want Delaware to be number one. I want us to have the best schools. I want us to have the best opportunity for economic development for all families, no matter their zip code, that children should thrive in this state. And in order to be able to be that success, you really have to be able to think differently beyond that budget. You know, of the folks in this race, I am the one person who has lived through statewide six deficits, two national recessions, ready on day one with that leadership.
Since you brought it up, I'll go to a question I have about the budget.
Sure.
Because you mentioned it specifically. History does tell us the next governor is going to face at least one economic downturn.
Mm-hmm.
It happens to every governor, sometimes multiple downturns.
Mm-hmm.
How would you approach that situation? If you walk into a budget year and the state is down $500, $600, $700 million.
Absolutely. Well, most importantly, you know, as a governor, you have to have somebody who can trust and who's ready and who's seasoned. And I am highly qualified, seasoned when it comes to understanding the state budget. You know, my other two opponents, you know, one's had a very small bucket of county dollars, $300 million or so, and the other's nicely ran an agency. Having said that, I am ready. I've faced this before. I've been there. I've been through that dance when we had $400 million recession in 2017. Also, as a member of the House, when we had issues with our budget back under Governor Minner for a portion, but then also Governor Markell. Mm-hmm. We had a big recession as well, and I was a senator then, and we had tough choices. I was part of the bond committee. I'm so proud to say that working collaboratively with the members of the General Assembly, not only do we have the Budget Stabilization Fund, which is important, we also have efficiencies. I'm really proud of our Government Efficiency Commission, the GEAR Commission. We've identified $100 million in efficiencies. That's where you go first. You go first to governmental efficiency. You look at your work technology. I'm about innovation. And what do you do about innovation? You use technology and innovation to your benefit. And I also, as a professor and a nurse and a college educator at the University of Delaware, have had to bring in funds there and funding. We leave a lot of money, a lot of federal dollars on the table. So we're going to be doing all things. The last thing you would do would be revenue generators, because we didn't raise PIT. Governor Carney's administration, Carney Hall Long administration, we didn't raise PIT, personal income tax. And we brought...
So that would be on the table if it was that bad.
I would say it would be a last resort.
I want to go back to kind of leadership style for a moment, because most governors have some kind of signature initiative or legislation that they pursue. Do you see going in having one or two signature agenda mm-hmm. items that you would pursue?
You know where it starts? One of my legacy items, Hall Long for the long haul, is committed to early education, birth to five. It will be an absolute game changer. Now, that's a long-term initiative that we will get started. Governor Carney and I have put in the budget, thanks to members of our General Assembly, the largest investment ever of dollars in early education. What that does is twofold. That's as music to the ears of our business owners. Whether you're a small business restaurant owner or whether you're a large business, early education is free childcare for business. But what it will do for our state is a game changer. And I want that to be one of my legacy items, early education.
So you're talking about education. Let's jump into that a little bit more. And we've talked about this previously in the wake of last fall's report on education funding that called for the state to spend an additional $600 million to $1.1 billion per year. Lawmakers did create a public education funding commission to look at the funding structure in the coming months.
Mm-hmm.
How much would you expect that group's findings to inform your approach, or do you have a vision you would expect to start to try to implement on day one about how to deal with education funding in the state?
On day one, I understand precisely working with this commission. I have a great relationship with those who are on there, and I've lived through it, where we've come up with funding ideas, we've come up with district boundaries. You have to have the leader at the helm of the ship who can lead. That I am ready on day one. You know, you have to be prepared to get to W, because with the funding formula, to the everyday listener, it's 7 decades old, it's very complicated, and it gets very political. If you don't have the right leadership, there will be winners and losers. I know how to get to everybody's W. So the districts who might, under the wrong leadership, think they're losing, I'm going to make sure there are incentives and carrots, and we're going to get things done. So the leaders, reader, listening audience is probably, what do you mean carrots? I'm meaning incentives of why we're going to reformulate, equalize. We did that this year. We put $63 million in opportunity funding to address English as second learners, our special needs population.
Do you see that opportunity funding as the main path forward, or does there need to be fundamental reform to the unit count in a way that either it eliminates that system and replaces it with some kind of weighted funding, or as some people have suggested, using it as a base and extending out from there and changing things?
Well, it's kind of anytime you make a systems change, you have to be prepared. You know, you don't want a domino effect. You have to be smart about that. And that's the fun part about being a research scientist. And I'm used to bringing new and innovative models here. You know, when people told me, oh my gosh, you're not going to be able to save retiree health care. We did that last year. You know, I championed that committee. We saved retiree health care while simultaneously coming up with a way to fund it. That's what we're going to do here. We're going to reform our children's education. Look at the issues. I'm going to establish an education council in the governor's office where we're going to have everyday parents, families, teachers, frontline, working with the teachers union. I am the candidate endorsed by and proudly by the Delaware State Education Association, who understands with the weighted formulas, equalization, you have to make sure that you do it in such a way that you don't pull the rug out. You have to make it such that all the districts and individuals come to various different agreements, because some will be perceived as winners or possibly losers. I don't want any losers. I want everyone to win here. There are ways in which we can do that in the funding formula.
I do want to talk about affordable housing, because that has certainly been an issue that has gotten a lot of attention in the last year or so. Where and how do you feel the state can be most effective at addressing it? And I guess what I've been asking most candidates is this a big solution issue or a creating a toolbox of smaller issue solutions type of issue?
Well, you know, it depends on your lens, right? You know, everybody has a different viewpoint and perspective. But I can start by this much. Housing's a right. For the listening audience who doesn't know, you know, I got involved in this in politics as a nurse because I was taking care of unhoused mentally ill homeless veterans. And housing needs to be affordable, but it also needs houses that all can afford, no matter your background, no matter your pay, no matter where you're coming from, you should be able to afford rent. We have to invest. We're 24,000 homes short. We need to invest. I have a plan, if you visit my website, where we're going to look at putting in 24,000 units minimum a year, working creatively, whether it's with home builders, whether it's with our advocacy groups, our nonprofit organizations. I've served on the NCAL board. I've served with other affordable housing organizations. And having led the National Lieutenant Governors, I see what other states have done. I am embarrassed, quite frankly, when I look at how long it takes in Newcastle County to get permits done, taking 2 years. And also, Delaware's Department of Natural Resources and DLDOT need to have a culture of excellence. People have strived to work toward that. I'm not a leader who blames people. I'm a leader who inspires. And we're going to work to make Delaware back to where we were before, where people wanted to come and build homes that were affordable for all.
I want to talk about healthcare cost and access, because they have become very stubborn issues. Delaware has one of the highest costs of care in the nation, struggles to attract and retain providers and specialists. It plays out in a lot of areas. You mentioned one earlier, the cost of coverage for state employees and retirees. Also, things like caring for an aging population, which the state certainly has at this point. Lawmakers did work on state retiree benefits, as you mentioned, this year, as well as creating the Hospital Cost Review Board, though ChristianaCare is suing over the legality of the creation of that board. It's a long way of saying, what would you be prioritizing to address cost and access in the state? Where do you have to attack first to move the needle on this issue?
Okay. Well, if you have 3 days, we can cover it. I am a professor.
I understand I'm asking
a lot here.
I am
a professor of health policy. And so we could talk forever on access, quality, and cost. Let's face it. You have quality care, you have access, and your costs go down. Okay. You got to aim for quality, and then you have your access and your care. Having been on the House Health Committee, the Senate Health Committee chairwoman, there's been nothing more important. If you look at the 1,000 bills that I humbly was able to sponsor and co-sponsor during my tenure as a legislature, I'd say 60% were health care. And they were first in the country. First overdose system of care, first impact fee, first stroke system of care, chronic disease prevention. When I was told by insurers in 2012 or 13, telehealth, you will destroy the health system. Can you imagine if we didn't have telehealth during the pandemic? You need a leader who's innovative. I can see the future in healthcare. And the future in healthcare in this state is not as simple as those three tripods, quality, access, cost. Mm-hmm. You have to have the hospitals. You have to have the pharmacy. You've got to have the insurance. But at the forefront of this is the patient. Picture a wheel. The picture of the wheel, you have the family in the hub and that individual. And having those services. Workforce is certainly a challenge everywhere. But we can do better. As the next governor, I will have delineated staff and individuals who are going to be ombudsmen. I'm going to have one ombudsman for employment, another ombudsman in healthcare and education. We're going to be leveraging a lot of funds. We leave a lot of money on the table when it comes to our health profession shortage area, which is Sussex County. Mm-hmm. We leave funds on the table also with some of our minority health and our Medicaid waiver. You know, when we talk about housing, Medicaid waiver 115 is something I want to bring. And to the listening audience, you're probably like, oh my gosh, she sounds like a policy professor. But what I'm saying, the basic takeaway is, folks, you need a leader who understands where to leverage dollars, both federally and as a partner in the state. I've been honored to be part of the Sussex Economic Development Committee that has worked with Tidal Health and Dr. Tam and others in Sussex, where we're piloting. We're going to bring a medical education program to the state. I've been part of the studies through the years. It's easy for a politician to sit here and say, I'm going to build a school. Folks, there's a lot to that. If somebody's making you that promise, go behind the curtain. But what I can promise you is that we will be bringing a medical education program, which means some of that may be through telestructure. Some of that may be through partnerships with other institutions. But we will have that.
Let's talk a little bit about climate change, because the state has taken steps recently to address that issue. Climate Change Solutions Act calling for the state to make zero net emissions of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere by 2050. Delaware's Advanced Clean Car 2's program calling for 82% of new cars and trucks sent to Delaware for sale be zero emission by 2032. And the state has also made some initial steps to procure offshore wind energy. I'll start with just the basic question. Do you support those various efforts that are already underway in terms of addressing climate change through those particular levers?
Here's the deal. Environment's critical. I'm a public health nurse. You need clean air, you need clean water. And so with the environment, whether it's climate change that we have to address, right, or if it's an issue of lead in our schools' drinking water, or if it's an issue of toxic air fumes, we have to address that. Here's what I've learned. I have learned that solar wind is great, and we should go to that. I love reaching for, you know, the moon and we fall in the stars, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's great to set goals and deadlines, but you need a leader that also recognizes sometimes when you have to have an off-ramp or you have to have a pause. EVs are wonderful, you know, and they're fantastic. But I also know it's not realistic to think all of my apartment complexes and all of these folks are going to be able to purchase an EV in a certain period of time. We may have to move the date a little. Again, I've learned that we set goals, we aim for them, we have good intention, and if we have to modify when the time comes, we modify.
Is that something you hope would mitigate some of the people who look at these things we're talking about and kind of bemoan what they call mandates and government mm-hmm. overreach? Is that yeah. part of what you're trying to say?
Because there's
been a lot of pushback on these
sure.
things.
Sure, absolutely. I think people just like leaders who are pragmatic and get the big picture, and I do.
So we've been asking all the candidates in all the races about this sense that there's a stronger distrust of government and calls for more transparency and accountability. And I want to address this topic with you through the lens of the issues your campaign has had with mm-hmm. campaign finance. In the fall, you and your campaign said you self-identified campaign finance reporting issues, mm-hmm. hired Summit CPA to examine the situation. And when Summit's work was done, you and your campaign said it found no violations or wrongdoing and that your amended mm-hmm. campaign filings backed that up. Mm-hmm. But now we have a report produced for the Delaware Department of Elections that also looked at your campaign finances and found the reporting, it called it, quote, incomplete, inconsistent, and often inaccurate, unquote. The elections commissioner did not refer the matter to the attorney general, but did tell you to make prompt corrective mm-hmm. actions. So the first question I want to ask you is, have you or do you plan to make corrections based on that report that was done for the Department of Elections?
Okay. I think anyone who knows me, and I said this in the fall, you mm-hmm. know, a nurse, you find an issue, you fix it. When I went from, you know, my house, kitchen table, House race, Senate race, many elected officials advised me when I got into office, use your spouse as your treasurer. We did that. When I transitioned to lieutenant governor, we should have changed. That was a mistake. It became a lot. There were true bookkeeping mistakes that my husband made. We discovered that as lieutenant governor. We went, we did our own internal review, as you mentioned, and we publicly reported and we moved on. After a while, obviously, probably some of my opponents and complainers went and asked for an investigation with the department.
Do you think that was prompted by your opponents?
I don't want to say for sure, but I have had some reason to believe so. But it doesn't matter, because here's what matters to me is my integrity. I have never once benefited at all from any campaign funds. And two, the fact that both our attorney general and our elections commissioner have said, you know, make amendments. There's no legal action here.
But
no one.
But to the question I asked, though, is do you plan to make more amendments?
Absolutely. But here's what we have to do first. That report was issued mm-hmm. without my opportunity for my legal team to respond. And that's unfortunate. That's very unfortunate. But it is what it is. And I look forward to making it record clear that we absolutely have not ever benefited and that we actually loaned the campaign more money than we were ever repaid.
So from the accountability standpoint of this, is it fair to say that without this report, you wouldn't be making these additional corrections? Can you argue that this report was needed because the work your campaign did was not comprehensive?
I don't want to keep repeating myself on the same question. I mean, the bottom line was this. I internally did a review. 8 years of research later under an investigation is different. I dare say if you were to pull in any other statewide elected candidate, whether in Delaware or anywhere, they would find issues every time you looked at it. And it's just unfortunate that that report does have inaccuracies.
So you have mentioned the fact that you felt like you're not maybe being treated fairly by your opponent in this situation. But your opponent's not the only one who has been critical of this situation. There have been other lawmakers, including State Senator Sturgeon, Representatives Phillips, Chukwuka, and Wilson Anton, who have publicly questioned what's happening with your campaign finances.
Well, I think it comes from the individual perspective. Here's what I can say point blank. You mentioned four names here. I mm-hmm. have on the other side 40-some other people who feel very differently.
Right, but if they count, then these count too, right? Yes. They either all count or they all don't count.
They're going off of a report that was issued by a FOIA request when I was not able to rebuttal. And when my data are there and present, there's a different outcome.
I do want to ask one final question that goes to the point of transparency. And it goes back to the initial campaign statement made when the work with Summit was completed. And that was that Summit CPA, a Delaware-based certified public accounting firm, was brought on board to audit records and receipts and reconcile all expenses and disbursements from the account. While reporting errors were made, Summit has determined that Bethany and her husband lent more to the campaign-related expenses over the course of prior campaigns than they were reimbursed for. No wrongdoings or violations were found. When the report came out from the Department of Elections, the scope of work for Summit was part of that. And that scope of work said that Summit was not going to audit or otherwise verify the data submitted to them, and that their engagement does not include procedures to detect errors, fraud, theft, or other wrongdoing. So the question I have is, can you clarify, was Summit's work an audit that found no wrongdoing or violations or not?
Okay. Again, for probably the 200th time I've had to answer this question publicly, we had an internal review.
Right, but your initial statement said it was an audit.
You know, press makes statements all the time that are misunderstood or misnomers.
But then why was there not a walking back of that when you realized people were asking you, hey, why don't you release the audit? Why don't you release the audit?
We have released every item. Has
right,
been
I know,
publicly.
But
it's been, Tom, come on. It's been there. And you know what? I'm not going to go down this path again. You will not have a person more open and honest than us turning in ourselves saying, hey, we're open, we're transparent, we have a question around how much we loaned, we want to get that clarified, and we did.
That's Democratic candidate for governor Bethany Hall Long. Our full conversation with her is available at DelawarePublic.org. Up next, our candidate conversation with another Democrat in the governor's race, Matt Meyer. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.